Before you go higher, further, and faster in theaters, why not dive into the best Captain Marvel comic books? Because this Geek History Lesson is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Further Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to the Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or team from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about it in about an hour, except this week, because we did Carol Danvers years and years and years ago, so we are here with one of our beloved list episodes.
Yeah, that's right. There's a little movie called Captain Marvel coming out March 8th, and no, it's not starring Zachary Levi, it's starring Brie Larson.
I wish they were both called Captain Marvel, I'm not going to lie.
I wish they were too. At the time of this recording, none of us have seen the movie, but we're going to be talking about the stuff that inspires the movie, the comic books. We're going to give our top five list of the best Captain Marvel stories. These, of course, are our favorites. They are not the objective best lists, so chill out with your comments or throw your comments at us. I don't care. But we did want to bring on somebody onto this podcast who's not only a comic book creator, a comic book artist, but someone who has actually worked on Carol Danvers. And you will know this gentleman from his art on Generations Captain Marvel and Captain Marvel, the Captain Marvel 2017 series, Ant-Man, and most recently as a creator on the WWE Forever comic book. Please welcome to the podcast Brent Schoonover. Brent, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
I'm going to be flatly honest here. We have been trying to figure out a way to bring you onto this podcast for quite a while.
For a couple years now.
It's all, you know, I like to stay in the shadows, you know. I just like keep back. No, I'm super excited to be on here. Excited to be talking about Carol and Captain Marvel. So thank you for having me. And I'm glad it finally worked out.
Now, really quickly, before we get to our list, I would love to hear from you basically your bona fides. How long have you been working in comic books, or basically as an artist professionally?
Well, I graduated from the Minneapolis College of Art and Design in 2002 with a comic book degree and an illustration degree. And I kind of slowly built a creator-owned book for a couple years. And I finally got published in 2005. And so I started going to conventions with that. It was called Horrorwood. It was a very small little forgetful comic from Ape Entertainment. But I learned a lot from it. And then kind of just kept chugging along a little by little. Like, it wasn't really until 2008, I think, that really comics became like a really regular thing that was part of like my day job. I worked a lot of like storyboard stuff for Minneapolis ad agencies and stuff like that. And then around 2010, it was almost like comics full time for me. So, yeah, it's been great. I've been working with Marvel and DC kind of a little bit for the last 4 or 5 years now, which has been fun. And obviously, Carol and Captain Marvel was a big part of that in the last year and a half of my life. So
we also have to tell
this is really fun to see.
We also have to tell our listeners real quick that they may not know this, but you've done a lot of work for the Batman 66 DC Digital series as well.
Yes. Yeah, that was probably it's hard because you always like get reminded of something. You're like, yeah, that was probably the most fun I've ever had drawing something, which has been pretty awesome to say I've had some great projects. But yeah, working with Jeff Parker on Batman 66 was definitely up there in the most fun I've ever had. And those stories were so much fun. And I miss working on that book. It was just a blast to work on.
I wanted to say, too, that you do a lot of really cool design work. Like, you did a Halloween shirt a couple years ago that I bullied you into sending me a copy of.
Yeah.
And recently, at the time of this recording on your Instagram, you did like a Paul Bunyan and a Babe the Blue Ox poster set that I thought were like amazing. So if people aren't following you on Instagram, I think they need to get over there right now.
Real quick, plug your Instagram.
Yeah, it's at B Schoony Art, B-S-C-H-O-O-N-Y Art. And yeah, I still do stuff outside of comics. I like to kind of keep kind of some regular clients that I've had over the years.
Some non-nerd stuff.
Yeah, non-nerd stuff. Well, it's crazy because, I mean, I love comics, but sometimes some of these jobs, like, you can make in a weekend what you do on, like, a 5 weeks drawing a comic book, and it's kind of hard to sometimes say no to that stuff. That was a really fun project for the Mall of America, actually. They have a couple rides that they have, and they wanted to kind of start promoting them a little more. So there was like three retro posters. So it was like Paul Bunyan, Babe the Blue Ox, and then there was their old Miney Town, which is their mini putt, which was it's got a Bigfoot theme to it too. So yeah, it was fun to do.
My friends, I got to interrupt this podcast real quick because we've got to keep the lights on at the Mind University. So I got to tell you about something. If you're big into film and TV franchises like Spider-Man, Captain Marvel, Aquaman, Game of Thrones, and Stranger Things, then keep listening. New Rock Stars, a new weekly podcast from Himalaya Media, digs into Marvel, DC, Star Wars, and all the other big franchises each week and breaks down the latest news, interviews, Easter eggs, and Reddit theories. So, you know, they're like a weekly version of Geek History Lesson, except they're talking about more current stuff. Now, the New Rockstars YouTube channel just crossed 500 million views, and now there's a podcast version of the popular New Rockstars Debrief Show. Podcast is available every Saturday morning and is a great way to keep up with this week's movie and TV news, rumors, and get a sneak peek of what's happening over the weekend. So when you have your bowl of cereal, you should open up your podcast app. Check it out. Now, Captain Marvel is coming up March 8th, and then there's news coming out every day about some of the big April titles, including Shazam, formerly known as Captain Marvel, Game of Thrones, and Avengers Endgame. So you do not want to miss the New Rockstars deep dives into what's happening now and what's happening next. So follow New Rockstars on Apple Podcasts, the Himalaya app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And I want to just say, welcome to the podcast field, New Rockstars. All right, now we got to go back to the show. Okay, so I think we have definitely proven Brent's bona fides, and everyone out there, we're going to talk more with Brent about his career and some of his comic book highlights and some non-nerd highlights on this week's episode of Geek History Lesson Extra, which of course is our podcast that you can only listen to at patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. That's of course the place where only $1 a month helps this free to you podcast and helps support our content. But enough about Brent. We need to talk about a woman called Carol Danvers, a captain called Marvel, and not a hero called Shazam. Stop mixing them up. All right. Let's go into our list. We all prepared top five lists of Captain Marvel stories. We did not give each other any rules. So basically any character that, as long as they're published by Marvel, that is named Captain Marvel, could be on this list. So Ashley, why don't you start us off with your number five choice for the best Captain Marvel story?
My number five story, I picked a little bit because of the optics of we are doing this really close to the release of the movie, and I did want to give people a really good in. I think this is a really great introduction to Carol if you don't know who she is, or you basically just know that she's Captain Marvel. This is Captain Marvel Volume 1, even though it's Captain Marvel Volume 2 from Marvel Now, called Higher, Further, Faster, More. It is written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by David Lopez. It is not the introduction to her. It is not the first time she is called Captain Marvel, but this is the first Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers adventure where she goes to space. And since we know that space is an important part of her character, it's something that makes her unique. It's something that I would bet is going to be an important part of Infinity War. I really wanted to include it for that reason.
None of that movie takes place in space. Are you crazy?
Well, I mean, there's no space in the 80s, right? That's a recent construct, planets and stuff like that.
Well, I don't get that reference.
Well, because the flashbacks, right? She's training in the 80s.
And we've 90s. Seen
But she was born in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Sorry. You know? So, we haven't seen the movie, everybody.
It was a bad joke. I'm sorry nobody understood it. Moving on. What else I really like about this particular volume is this is where they really planted for the current contemporary continuity, because I think we're now all new, all different, all diverse Marvel now. There's just so many adjectives. Yeah. Brent would know better than I. This is...
Oh, man.
The first...
It's brutal. I remember I was, so you guys know, I'm good friends with Mitch Garretts, who's currently on like Mr. Miracle and stuff like
who's
that.
Who's also been a guest in this podcast.
He worked on The Punisher, and he was a Marvel Now before I was a Marvel Now. And I was like, Marvel Now-ish? Like, I was like, oh, I can't. We couldn't quite figure out which is like how to phrase this past tense, present tense. Like it's a fun problem to have, I guess.
So, Marvel but, Now circa 2013.
Yeah. There we go.
But what's great about Higher, Further, Faster, More is that this is the first real introduction for whatever we're calling the current continuity of Carol's romantic relationship with Rhodey, which is actually one of my favorite parts of her character. And the way that David Lopez draws Rhodey, he's really, really adorable here. And you get to see that they are at odds, but when she comes to him and tells him, I need to go to space, I have to do this for me, I have to define the kind of hero I am and my place in the world outside of the Avengers, he's really, really supportive of her, and he's really lovely about it, where you would expect everyone to be like, cool, well, see ya, find a new boyfriend where you get back, I don't really care. And then... Yes. She goes and hangs out with the Guardians of the Galaxy, and this book was pre-Guardians of the Galaxy movie, but it's this weird hybrid between the Silver Age characters and what would become the Marvel series that predated the movie. So Star-Lord is actually, I think, the most likable Star-Lord has ever been in this particular series. And then they use Carol to introduce us to a bunch of alien races that become important to her later on, and they become important in the Guardians of the Galaxy book later on. So Higher, Further, Faster, More has a lot of really important puzzle pieces to this character, to the current cosmic universe, and I think it's something that, if you're not used to this type of adventure, it's a really good, soft intro. My only criticism of it is that she repeatedly says, I'm a soldier, I can take an order, and I think disobeys every single order throughout the course of the book.
Also, she's not a soldier, she's an airman.
Yes, but this...
As a soldier, that's wrong.
Yes, but it does say, I'm a soldier. I think it's a great introduction. I think it's a really clean version of this character. I think the art is beautiful, so I happily place it at my number 5.
Nice. Cool.
Yes.
That's a good choice. I expected it to be on this list because it deserves to be. Brent, what would be your number 5 for best Captain Marvel stories?
My number 5, actually, and I don't know if I'm on it, we're supposed to spoil it, but this was your pick, number 5, was my number 3 pick.
Hey!
So, yeah. But my number 5 pick was the Captain Marvel set, Down. It was Captain Marvel number 7 through 12 by Kelly Sue DeConnick, Dexter Soy on art, and Jamie McKelvey, which he was kind of the strong reason. It's probably got the most iconic image since in the last 5 or 6 years of Carol. It's Jamie's artwork. It's all in black. You can't really see her.
Yes.
She's kind of mixed with the stars, and she's got those two awesome binary powers. It's very simple. It's on T-shirts all over. It's just it's like a rock star poster to me. It's just like it's super it's the most iconic image of her, and I was kind of hoping we were going to see an actual – version of it as like a movie poster, but we haven't quite seen it yet, but maybe they're saving it for the movie, who knows. But that so this one to me was just my favorite part about it was, and I apologize, I don't know how in depth and how great I can go in as great as Ashley did, but
it's as much as you want.
Oh, it's fine.
It's as much as you want. The thing I loved about this story arc for me was that it reminded us that Captain Marvel has always been sort of, you know, there's Carol and there's Mar-Vell, but there's also been other Captain Marvels as well. And there was Captain Monica Rambeau.
I think how they say it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what was it?
I think it's Rambeau.
Okay. But I just loved this story that was like, and Kelly was just firing on all cylinders in this book, and that she brought that part out. And she didn't have to, but like, I just loved it. Like, for me growing up in the 80s and kind of that was actually my first Captain Marvel character that I actually had any interaction with. It was really cool to see her bring her back and establish her, you know, in the Captain Marvel status quo. I really enjoyed that quite a bit. And I'd love to see a little bit more. And she has shown up in a couple other books, but I would love to see more with her in the future. So, but they team up, they go out in space, they kick some butt. It was a really fun book, and Jamie's art is just I wish we got a little more of him on Captain Marvel than what we did. Obviously he's got the Wicked and Divine that was kind of going shortly after this, it was a beautiful, this was probably like my favorite artistic wise this was of all the books we'll probably talk about today, this one's pretty high up there for me in terms of art.
And I will say that I know exactly the image that Brenda's talking about. I will share it on our socials so that people can see it when this episode comes out. So fear not. Head on over to Twitter and check it out.
Cool.
Yeah.
Jason. So,
that's a great choice.
Thanks.
My number five for best Captain Marvel stories is not even a story called Captain Marvel. It happened in Avenging Spider-Man number 9 and number 10. This is a Kelly Sue DeConnick story with art by Terry Dodson. And this, of course, was a Spider-Man series that was sort of they were trying to make it Marvel Team Up from back in the day, which is such a great series. But of course, we can't call anything Marvel Team Up now because nobody would buy it. So we have to call it Avenging Spider-Man. But basically, every 2 to 3 issues, Spider-Man would team up with somebody new. And in 9 and 10, he teamed up with Carol Danvers. Now, the thing I love about this story is it's very character-based, because the story starts out with a scene where Carol wants to take Peter on a trip, and so he's like, great, let's go, and she takes him to this tiny little biplane that she bought herself, and she's like, we're going to fly there, and you find out that Peter, a guy who swings between buildings, is actually afraid of flying.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, he was on a plane.
Yeah, but anyways, it's like a really great moment, and of course, this leads into they get caught between an army of mechanical police, and they meet a 50 foot tall redheaded madwoman who's trying to run away from these men, and it becomes basically the whole story is basically Peter and Carol trying to convince this redheaded girl who has new superpowers, basically how to not be a villain. But the interesting thing about it is I never considered the character dynamic between Peter Parker and Carol. To be honest with you, I never saw them as friends. I didn't think they would be friends or really get along, because she's kind of very buttoned up and military and let's do this thing, and Peter's maybe I'll pay the rent one day.
He's basically the star of the musical Rent.
But this story by Kelly Sue DeConnick really does. It's very much a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man story, and I think it kind of makes it a friendly neighborhood Captain Marvel story as well. It's very sweet, and the art. I basically love everything Terry Dodson draws, and a lot of his facial expressions between the two are worth the price of admission alone, and that's the reason why Avenging Spider-Man 9 and 10 are my number 5.
Nice.
This one was like an honorary mention for me, because I really loved this book, and it was kind of reminded me of the kind of my interaction with probably Miss Marvel or Carol in that, like, when I first was younger, and that, like, she was always one of these great supporting characters. Like, I don't think at the time when I was reading, when I was young, she had her own book. But, like, it was, like, one of those great characters who always showed up as a guest star. She kind of, like, it was, like, Doctor Strange, Black Panther, and Miss Marvel. Like, it showed up. I was like, oh, this is going to be a good issue.
And now they're all the leads of movies.
Well, yeah, and that's a good I was going to say, Brent, that's a great point you bring up, because there's a good chunk of the 80s where Carol is just an X-Men supporting character.
Absolutely. Yep.
Which is nuts.
And I didn't know that, because I wasn't a big X-Men reader at the time. And so I didn't know about anything. So when I was kind of digging through and kind of like, I knew I had a couple book like stories, I was like, oh, this is definitely going to be on my list. But I wanted to do some digging. It took me a while to realize, like, oh, she played a big part in the X-Men and stuff. And so I don't know if those are going to be on your guys' list, but I look forward to either checking those out after the podcast or something like that, or listening to what you guys have to say to sell me on how sweet they are. So,
Well, let's find out. Ashley, what's your number 4?
So this is the second time we've done one of these lists with somebody who works on the titles.
Oh.
And
what was the other one?
Supergirl Stories with Sterling.
Oh, that's true.
And both times, unironically, they've worked on something that was going to make my list either way. So if Brent wants to talk about this, he's welcome to join. But I definitely wanted to include, it's a recent book, Generations, Captain Marvel and Mar-Vell. And the reason I had to put it on my list, and our lists are pretty loosey-goosey, so it could have been slotted in anywhere. But the reason I wanted to put it on my list is because I really love Mar-Vell. And I thought that this comic did such a good job at showing why these two characters worked together during the brief time that they did, what they learned from each other, how they complement each other, and how they are both different sides of the Captain Marvel identity. And Brent is someone who Jason and I are huge fans of. We commissioned
him, you're
welcome, to do work on science. We commissioned him to draw something for our collection. Thank you, Mitch Garretts, for tricking him into being our friend.
but the trip to Phoenix, it's all it took.
That's right. But the first page where Mar-Vell shows up and you draw him in a hero shot, it's like one of my favorite shots of that character.
Oh, that is a good shot. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to go full like 60s, 70s Jim Starlin on that. So
yeah, it feels very throwbacky in a way that's exciting because we don't do hero shots like that anymore. We don't do them from the same kind of angles. And it was the first time that I really understood why he trusts Carol, why she's the person that he decides to like bring up, and why she is not allowed because like anyone can do anything, but why she's really worthy of this identity, because I don't have a problem with her as a character, but of all the legacy characters, she doesn't really come up under a lot of his guidance or a lot of his tutelage, mostly because he's dead forever. And I really enjoyed that your team was able to explore that. And then when she sort of just blips out at the end of that first issue, it's really kind of sad because I was like, I would have loved an ongoing series of them just hanging out in space.
Yeah, I really was hoping that like, okay, so I don't know if you want me, how long much you want me to jump in here, but like
as much as you want, truly.
Generations was one of the craziest Marvel projects I ever got. First, I had done some fill-in work on the Captain Marvel main series with Margaret, and it was really fun. The regular series artist got sick, so I had to jump in at the tail end of the story. And I was just like, it was one of those things where like when you jump in, you don't even know if you're really doing a good job. You're just trying to hit a deadline to make your editor happy. And like it was fun, but like you just didn't really like in those stories, there's aliens and there's other things going on. And by the time you're like done with it, you're like you're almost feeling like you're getting in a groove with the characters. And like I had never drawn her before. And so I had so much fun drawing it. But I'm like, oh, I'm going to be kind of bummed if I don't ever get a chance to do it again. My editor, Sana, messaged me and she was like, we're really happy with, thanks, we appreciate it. Would you like to do a little more Captain Marvel down the road? And I was like, yeah, love to. Cut to C2E2, me and my wife are sitting at a bar the day before the show, having a beer, enjoying it. And all of a sudden my phone blows up and I was just like, what's going on? And Chris Omni messaged me going, congrats on the new Captain Marvel gig. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, yeah, they just announced to the at the Diamond Meeting Summit thing in the morning that you're doing the Generations Captain Marvel thing. And I was like, I am? And so
that's such a comics industry way to like
now
story.
Get to work, Brent.
Yeah. So that whole weekend I had like CBR, new, like all these places coming up to me asking me about Generations Captain Marvel. And I didn't know anything about it. I'm like, I didn't know if Margaret was writing it. Like, I was trying to find more information online. And it was,
I just hope you told them so many red herrings of plot that just went nowhere.
It's going to be intense. No. So I got back and I had to message Sana about it. And she's like, I'm so sorry. She's like, I had to fly out for something. And like, we locked it in and I gave the approval. And she's like, I meant to, you know, message it. And it happened. So I was like, oh, it's fine. But, so yeah, I didn't really know what I was in for right off the bat, and then I got Margaret's script, and I just was like, the older stuff I can work on, like her historic stuff for Marvel, I'm just kind of flocked to that kind of thing. I had a bunch of older Captain Marvel books in like my first stash of comic books, which was a friend of ours was leaving to go to college and he just sold my brother a bunch of comics for really cheap. And it was just like a huge box of them. And at the bottom of them was like some Captain Marvel books. And I just it was Starlin stuff. And I just totally got into it. And it was kind of one of those early things that like, I just loved the Marvel space stuff so much. And so it was a chance to play with the stuff I kind of grew up first, but then I had been a big fan of what Kelly was doing with Captain Marvel, and I just loved the merger idea. I just thought it was super fun, and so I kind of wanted to approach it where, like, every time Mar-Vell was on the page, I wanted it to almost feel like it was a Starlin comic book, like retro panel angles and looks and and stuff like that. And we were going to try to even like see if we could color him where it looked like a old comic book or something.
Oh, like the dots
that.
And everything.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Kirby crackles in it, including in Carol's around her hands, which I'd never seen before. And I'm a sucker for Kirby crackles.
Yeah. I don't know why. Like, because there's never, to be honest with you, there's never been a real consistent way to draw her binary powers like mm-hmm. that. And I was trying to stay, when I first was on the regular series, I kind of stayed with what had been done, in the book, just for consistency. But once this was a standalone, I was like, we're going crazy. I'm doing that just makes me want to go to Kirby Crackle really bad. And I felt like it would be a bonding thing with them, you know? And so unfortunately we didn't get to color it that way, but like, I'm glad most people seem to see where I'm coming from with the art and trying to make it look like they're from different times, you know, from a certain visual language part of the book. So, but I love drawing him. I love drawing her, and I would love to do more with them. Like, I think there's more you could do with just that, you know, getting them together. Cause I don't know. It just seems like today's generation, there's not enough of it that I think that there's an interest in it. So I don't know. Hopefully they'll do it.
I definitely agree. And Brent, you've talked a lot about my number four. Why don't you tell us about your number four?
All right. I got talking. Now I got to find it. mine is the Christopher Anka first chapter that he drew called Rise of Alpha Flight.
Oh,
I
nice.
I was a huge fan.
That's a good one.
I was a huge fan. Yeah, and I'll probably talk a lot artistically about some of this stuff more than anything, because that's kind of where I'm coming from on all of these. I think Chris is – I know I mentioned Jamie, but, like, I just think he's today's the greatest, like, designer for costumes right now in comics. Like, I just – the things he's done with Spider-Woman and even the tweaks he did with Captain Marvel, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, you're essentially seeing it on the big screen here coming up. And so and when they relaunched the actual series, I think it was Michael Fazekas and Tara Butters were the writers. But I think no disrespect to them, but I think this was Chris's breakout book. And the way he illustrated all of the covers for this series to almost look sort of like a 1950s or 1930s sort of like. Progress American Progress poster, you know, I just thought that was a really cool look, and it made so much sense for that character. And just where the series, the story itself, it takes her to the formation of the space program for Alpha Flight, and the way she's sort of able to sort of stay up there, but her relationships back home are still, you know, like with Rhodes is still going on. I'm sorry, I'm trying to
no please to,
you're all good, man. You're all good.
Yeah, they continue some of that in here, which I was a big fan of. I know you had talked about that from the higher, further, faster, you know, like that relationship, I think, is one of the better current Marvel Comics relationships.
I agree.
But to me, this is just like Chris's breakout book. I just thought this was the perfect character for him. And it just every issue, and he was teamed with Matt Wilson on colors, which, you know, Matt's one of the best colorists in the business today. And those two have carried it over from Alpha or from Captain Marvel to the Runaways. And it just seems like they keep leveling up artistically. And so, I was just it's a big, beautiful book to look at. And I loved having Alpha Flight, the fact that we get Puck as like one of the main characters in this book. Like, I was always a fan of Alpha Flight when I was a kid, but to see this kind of unique change into the status quo of it, but it makes so much more sense. I don't know. It was a cool idea of taking, I guess, maybe these lower tier Marvel characters and giving her a really cool supporting cast. It was, you know, that she kind of needed. So I don't know. It all really worked really well for this series. And I'm a big fan.
That series is my honorable mention. It almost got onto my list because I agree with you. They're a great supporting cast for Carol. And also the retooling of Alpha Flight, which I'm a huge fan of as well, is mm-hmm. so smart.
Yeah, definitely. And I didn't know if you could come out with another Alpha Flight book, having it be sort of status quo as it was. But putting him in space with Carol, like, it's just, it's perfect idea of like utilizing some really cool characters to a character who kind of needed a new supporting cast. And I just thought it was really clever.
Now, friends, I have to interrupt the podcast again real quick because we've got to make sure the lights stay on in the Mind University, because I'm here to tell you about Audible. Now, if you don't know what Audible is, Audible allows you to get access to an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation books, mystery books, thriller books, memoirs, and more. In fact, actually, I use Audible myself. I use it when I'm driving in the car because it's an excellent way to read books with your ears and your minds, because they're all audiobooks. In fact, I've been listening to On Writing, a memoir of the craft by Stephen King. And if you like horror stuff, you like any of his other movies or his TV shows, then it's an excellent audiobook to get inside of his mind. And the amazing thing about this is that you can be an Audible member, you can listen to that book, you can choose three titles every month, one audiobook and two Audible originals, that you can't hear anywhere else. This is an amazing app. It's one of my favorite apps. And if you're stuck in the car all day long, it's one of the best things that's going to help that drive be a little bit nicer. Now, Audible, the most inspiring minds and the most compelling stories, is all happens there, and the best place to listen to new books. So get started with a 30-day trial when you go to audible.com/geekhistory or text geekhistory to 500-500 and listen for a change. That's audible.com/geekhistory, GEEKHISTORY, or text geekhistory to 500-500. And now back to the show.
All right, Jason, let's round this out. What is your number four?
My number four is probably the most recent book on this list because it just finished, I believe, a couple of months ago. This is The Life of Captain Marvel.
Nice.
Written by Margaret Stahl with art by the fantastic, the amazing, the literally one of the best comic book artists of all time, Carlos Pacheco. Now, if you don't know, The Life of Captain Marvel is sort of Carol finds herself in the middle of a fight. She's reliving memories of a life that she can't remember. But basically, it's a 5-part miniseries that is sort of to retool the character of Carol Danvers, give her an origin for Carol Danvers. And you can kind of see there's a little bit of editorial oversight in this, that there's some Marvel Comics executive decisions in this, be like, you know what, we need a trade that's Carol's origin right before the movie comes out. But you know what, this series overcomes that because it takes Carol back to her mom, and it makes the story about Carol and her mom. Because if you know anything about the origins of Carol and her dad, you know that they had a very cantankerous relationship. He didn't think that any woman should ever join the military at all, and of course Carol did that. He also didn't think that any woman could ever join NASA, and Carol did that as well. But her relationship with their mom is very interesting, and you find out a huge, huge revelation in this miniseries about her mom. I'm not going to spoil it here in case anybody wants to read it. The only thing I will say is I'm 100% certain, again, we have not seen the movie yet, that they're probably going to take pieces from this book for the movie. I bet you there was a little bit of passing back and forth. But Margaret Stahl, again, really, really kind of steamrolls and smooths out a very convoluted character history for Carol and sort of links it back to everything that does that deals with her family. And then this whole book is drawn by Carlos Pacheco, and Carlos Pacheco could literally draw the phone book and I'd read it. So
yeah.
The two pieces of that, the amazing art and the character dynamics, to me, that's the reason why this made my number four.
This was my number one.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Do you want to save it, or you want to talk a little bit about it too?
No, I think it's happy to talk about it. Carlos Pacheco just drew the crap out of this book. I know he had some help with Margaret. Oh, I don't want to butcher her last name. Do you know how to say it?
I don't.
Savoy? Is it Savoy? Boy. But she did these back. She did a couple of flashback things in the book. But it is just Carlos was so good on this book. It reminded me of Avengers Forever. Like, he was in that mode, and it was so beautiful to look at. And I don't think that this was an easy story to do from Margaret's standpoint, sort of streamlining that origin story.
Mm-hmm.
And I get why, like, when I read it, I'm like, oh, this is just a this is the book you're trying to get people when they walk out of Captain Marvel to be like, here's the one you want. And I totally understand that, and I got it, but I wasn't expecting it to have as much heart as it did. As much as I've read, about Carol and stuff like that, this was a big family story that I am such a sucker for. And, going back to Maine to help with a certain tragedy that happens in her family, I don't want to spoil it, there was just some really heavy emotional beats that, I hate to say it, I haven't really read something like this at a Marvel comic like this in a little while. I really thought.
I agree. I just want to add something real quick. I was going to say that the reason why this made my list and made for you is that I can't think of another Carol story that has such an emotional beat in it like this story.
Yeah. I mean, her stories are always sort of like, let's get up and go kind of, like they kind of the speed of the character a little bit like that. This really slows her down. I mean, no, I don't want to spoil it, but she literally leaves the Avengers for a while to take care of some heavy family issues. And I don't know. I'm a sucker for those stories. I just feel like the Marvel and DC universe, they're always going. And if you can pause to slow down and just kind of take a little moment to this sort of reminded me of a Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale, Marvel blue, a color book like Daredevil Yellow or something like that. It really sort of fit in with that kind of we're going to pause and reflect a little bit. And I just thought it was really beautiful. And Carlos's art was great. And the villain was pretty, pretty intense, a real threat. And so I was a huge fan of this when I read it. And I just read the last issue because I was a little behind when I got asked to do the podcast. And I was like, stick the landing and be my number one because I was really into it. And I thought that last issue was great.
I understand why you put it at number one. And for me, just personally, the reason why it's lower on my list is because I always think for newer stories, I always try to do the thing where I try to give them a couple of years until. Because I will tell you this, a couple of years from now, if we were to redo this list, this one might easily become my number one.
Also, feel bad. On our best single issues, Jason's number five was my number one. It was a Nightwing issue. So is Marguerite Sauvage the name that you guys were trying to pull?
Yes.
For the backup artist? Yeah. French last names throw people.
Every time I say a name that I'm not sure of, it just reminds me of when I was a kid and I was like, John Romita.
Yes,
I'm like, I just don't know how to pronounce names.
I still can't say many creators' names. I still say Madera. Joe Madera.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move into the number threes. Ashley, what is your number three?
My number three is something that I don't think is collected, even though it is a fully and complete storyline, unless you are online or you have access to the Marvel Unlimited app. Oh, it is. Look at that. Excellent. So I like to call this the death of Miss Marvel, but it is called Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, the Miss Marvel years. It's a very long title, but it's basically Miss Marvel number 35 to 50. But I'm specifically talking about 35, 36 and 37, which is the death of Miss Marvel storyline. What I like about this is everything except her anatomy. And it's that Carol's a very fiery, emotional character, which is a really great outward representation of her powers and the kind of things that she's capable of. And this literally shows her powers overtaking her and ultimately leading to her death. It's a very sad death for this character. Carol gets very mistreated as a character until she becomes Captain Marvel. And some people could look at this as a great example of it. I kind of look at this as her Phoenix moment. I guess you could take that in the comic book sense or in the mythological sense. This is her fiery death before her rebirth into becoming the character that is who we're going to see in the movies. And you get to see her. She's so badass in this. She fights a bunch of really evil. She's going up against Norman Osborn during the Dark Reign storyline. She kicks butt. She looks great. She's betrayed by her team. It's everything that you want from a great, intriguing superhero story. And she is the head of the team. But when she was Miss Marvel, she was often relegated to being a supporting character. And even in her own title, there's often two male co-stars who will overtake her. And I like that we see Carol take the lead, take control, even as she's literally falling apart. And When She Catches on Fire is one of the most stunning pieces of art in this book.
I also think she was leading Bendis's Mighty Avengers team during this time.
Well, I didn't read that.
Right before this time. It's funny, if I may.
Please.
This is also my number three.
Hey, look at that.
Nice.
And it's interesting. So the reasons why I picked it as number three is that there's this undercurrent in the storyline of the Church of Hala.
Hala Kree.
Which is, long listeners of this podcast will know, we have this ongoing joke of Hala Kree. You know, it's like they're the Kree religion.
Yeah.
And it's this idea. It's funny because before this storyline, I never thought that humans would take some of the aliens that they've encountered in the Marvel Universe and sort of be like, you know what? They got the right idea.
Maybe
we should, you know, and so the idea that
it feels very Church of Rao, if I may.
But this whole storyline is it like sort of starts off where there's a mass suicide of these Church of Hala characters. And because Carol is sort of half human, half Kree-ish, she sort of has to deal with it. And then on top of that, she also has to deal with, all the Norman Osborn nonsense, because, of course, during this time, he was in control of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is called Hammer, and his Dark Avengers. And not only did his Dark Avengers include Novar, which is the Grant Morrison Marvel boy.
Her replacement for all, or who wants to be her replacement.
Who Norman names Captain Marvel.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they take the Miss Marvel identity and her original Miss Marvel costume.
And they give it away.
And they give it to Moonstone, who is one of the Thunderbolts, which is also...
Jason loves the Thunderbolts.
I love the Thunderbolts. So
Thunderbolts.
Oh, man, I love the Thunderbolts. They're such a great concept. But so there's this interesting idea that she's fighting with the identity of where her powers come from, but then literally her superhero identity is robbed from her in this storyline, and she has to fight the literal dark version of herself in this storyline. I just thought it was very, very interesting. And it was one of the storylines that I think 100% took advantage of kind of what the setup of Dark Reign could do for a character.
I'm glad you said that, because I almost put this one on my list. I was a big fan of the... I should have put it on number three. We could all... Yeah.
But it tied.
I thought that... I think what you said... I don't remember a lot of the event Dark Reign, but I remember reading a lot of the tie-in books or what the fallout of those books were for certain books that I was reading. And I always thought it did a really good setup of just giving this great opposition to like all these characters, or almost making an alter ego or an evil version of themselves. And I was a huge fan of this one. I thought they hit a home run on utilizing the opportunity of the Marvel big event and kind of taking it, because sometimes some of the books, it's almost like they're in the middle of their own thing and they have to kind of pause to like add this stuff in, and we all can kind of see that when it happens. But when it works out that like they can utilize it and make something like this, it's kind of like it's what the big events are kind of all about. And I thought they did a really good job with this one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm glad that this was both mine and Ashley's number three.
There you go.
Brent, have we covered your number three already?
We did cover my number three, and Ashley crushed it on the higher, further, faster, more. So, but
all right,
I could touch base on one quick that was kind of funny. It's a one issue.
Please do.
Thing, which wasn't going to be on my list, but when I was a kid, we went camping in what's called the Wisconsin Dells, which is this weird, hokey little place that has like a Yogi Bear themed campground. And so, I was pretty young, but I was a huge comic book fan, but I had forgotten my stack of comics that I was going to bring with. And it was like, we're only going to be there for 3 days, but that was like an eternity for me to not have any comic books. But like out of nowhere, a friend of ours who we were camping with said, oh, my son has a bunch of comics in our camper that he's never that he never took with him. And so when I went through him, there wasn't a lot of good ones, but the actual first issue of Miss Marvel from the 70s was in there. And so that was a Chris Claremont and Jim Mooney book with Jerry Conway and John Buscema and Sal Buscema and John Romita on art.
Every legend of the time apparently worked on her origin.
Yeah. And so it was kind of like crazy. And I've kind of looked and it seemed like, I think if I've read correctly a little bit, like this is one of those issues that like somehow fell through the cracks of the due date. And it was like, oh, we got to crank this thing out. And so it was, from what I've read, it seems like it was one of those like really like, let's just get all our great guys on it, slap dash it out. But it looks beautiful. And I don't know. The costume itself, I think we've come a long way from where it's been. But it was pretty interesting. It reminded me of a lot of memories, like I said, kind of going back and thinking about it from the campground. But like Carol gets a job at a woman's magazine editing for J. Jonah Jameson.
I remember that run. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you go from fighter pilot to editing a ladies magazine. And then she has to fight the Scorpion for a good chunk of it. And it was all over the place. But it was prime 1970s Marvel comic book to me. And I always have a soft spot for this one because, one, it had all these awesome artists on it. And two, it kind of it gave me something to read during a rather boring camping trip when I was a kid. So,
well, that's always the best comic there.
It is. They just kind of came, and it was cool because it came out of nowhere. I didn't think there was going to be any comics, and then all of a sudden, a friend of ours is like, oh, my son has a bunch of them in the camper, and it was like, oh, this is awesome. So, yeah, I can't, like I said, the story was kind of forgettable, but like, when I think about books, like, it always kind of brings back that memory of like, oh, that, I remember when I read that. So, if you get a chance, go back and read some of those early ones. I don't think they hold up terribly well, but, you know, there's some good stuff there, at least artistically, I think, sometimes.
Well, speaking of good stuff, Ashley, it is now time to find out what is your number two.
My number two is one of is a choice I made because I have self-imposed rules when we do this list, and I like to do one that's older than me. So this is my category for this, and that is The Brood Saga, which is a classic Uncanny X-Men storyline. And if people don't know, because I didn't know this until quite recently when I was reading, Jason, what are the oversized X-Men books called? Grand Design.
Grand Design.
I was reading X-Men Grand Design, and they basically got up to this storyline in the second volume. Captain Marvel, or Miss Marvel at the time, got her powers taken away by Rogue, and that's how Rogue can fly, and that's how Rogue can do all of these things that Rogue has no business being able to do with her mutant power. It's one of those weird Silver Age X-Men go to space and deal with alien storylines that I don't like as an X-Men story, but I really like this as a Miss Marvel story because I think this is where you plant the seeds of her personality. You get a sense of why Carol's quite an angry character and she's quite an emotional character. I brought that up a number of times, all of which is fine. And this is where it comes from because she is really betrayed by this subset of people that usually most of the superheroes in the Marvel Universe trust the X-Men, and she is betrayed by one of them. She is betrayed by a child, and nobody has her back during this time. So even though it's largely an X-Men story, I think where Miss Marvel is highlighted here is really interesting. I think it's really dynamic storytelling on her personality, and also her relationship with Ace is a big part of the storyline because she does lose a lot of her memories and a lot of her sense of self, and so much of that, because it was the before times, is tied up in her relationship with him, and that's going to affect her all the way through to the death of Miss Marvel storyline that we just talked about, where she's still trying to remember who he is. So mm-hmm. If you want, Brent gave a really great classic throwback. If you want another great classic throwback, I would say check out The Brood Saga. It's very weird, but in the best way possible. And my number one is also weird and spacey, so they felt like they had to be tag teamed at the top of this list.
All right, Brent, now it's time to hear your number two.
My number two is actually the Avengers, the Enemy Within storyline.
Nice.
And this one, much kind of like, I did not read this one until recently. I kind of had like a backlog of, do you guys know Joe Quinone's art at
yes.
all?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Joe. We're friends. And I had some of these, but I also believe it came out kind of around the time I think my second daughter was born. So like, I just have like a stash of books that like just never quite got to it. And so it wasn't actually until like last summer I read this one, and I'm so like, oh man, this awesome book's been sitting here the whole time and I haven't read it. So, but this one's kind of goes back to like why I think The Life of Captain Marvel was my number one choice. This one is a great adventure, but it also, the main part of it is that Carol, she finds a lesion on her brain during the middle of all this Avengers craziness going on. And they're kind of telling her, you need to slow down and you need to, you know, deal with this. But at the same time, the character Yon Rogue, which is from the original Captain Marvel run, like from the 60s.
Yes.
Reappears. And
he reappears in the Legacy book as well.
In the Legacy book. And so it's kind of like this character has come back and she feels very much like she's the one who has to deal with this. And it's almost becomes this problem, like every time she uses her powers, she's putting herself at risk and stuff, that this lesion could turn into something worse. And it's kind of funny. It's kind of got like a Spawn thing to it. Like, you know, if the more he uses his powers, the more, you know, he gets closer to death. And it's got this really great emotional beat to it that I don't know. It really kind of captivated me. And also just the artwork was just fantastic. Scott Hepburn, who did Drax the Destroyer with CM Punk in their Marvel Now, I think he was on art as well with Joe. Felipe Andrade was on there. It was a really great group of artists that, even though it kind of had to handle it off, they're handed off quite a bit. Just, it was a beautiful book. And I was just a big fan of this kind of emotional story in the middle of the Avengers. And I don't know, I've as much as I love Carol's solo stories, I do love her in these big groups like the Avengers. And I have never read any of her stuff in the X-Men. So this Brood storyline that you just mentioned, I'm really excited to go check that out.
Oh, please, please be sure and let me know what you think of it, because if you hate it, I'm going to be so disappointed.
What's that?
I said, let me know what you think of it. If you hate it, I'm going to be super disappointed.
Okay. No, I think Dave Cockrum is on art on that. So that'll be fun to look at. So, but so that's my number two.
All right, Jason, what's your number two?
Well, my number two is sort of, we've touched on this a little bit, but mine is In Pursuit of Flight, the Kelly Sue DeConnick, Emma Rio. This is the story where she gets the badass new redesign. She gets to finally call herself Captain Marvel. And also she time travels a little bit back to World War II. But there's a great scene in this where, and I talk about this a little bit in my upcoming book, Super Soldiers, available for pre-order right now.
There you go.
Shelf plug. Captain America, of course, is an army. He's from the soldier. And Carol Danvers was a colonel in the Air Force. She technically outranks him. But there is a funny scene where he tells her to take the rank of captain and to take the title and that she's earned it. And the scene is all about, do I deserve this? Have I done enough? And Captain America basically says, yes, he gives her permission. And if anybody gives you permission to do anything, it's Captain America. So do it. But it's an interesting idea. And I think it's the first time a lot of people gave, I think, a lot of respect and a lot of true seriousness to Carol Danvers, because to be honest with you, it's kind of the first time that I actually considered her to be a character, because my experiences in the past with Carol Danvers had been as Miss Marvel in the Kurt Busiek George Perez run, where she was the drunk of the team and
in a French cut bikini.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I never liked her back then, and this was sort of the storyline that sort of made me start liking her. And of course, Jamie McKelvey made the iconic look that is now in this new movie. But there's an interesting scene as well. For me, the storyline is all about scenes. That's the reason why I'm going to keep talking about it. And she goes back to World War II. She meets this Banshee squadron, which is all made up of kick-ass ladies. And in Japan, they fight again a bunch of kamikaze pilots. Now, these kamikaze pilots have advanced alien weaponry. And Carol knows that this is not normal for the time, that something's wrong. But she captures them, one of the Japanese pilots, and she lets him go back to his unit instead of capturing him. The Banshees are like, well, what are you doing? Why'd you let this guy go? He's just going to bring the entire army. And Carol gives this very amazing stand-up, you know, Marvel hero speech where she says to the other women, let them bring whatever they want to bring, because I know that the five of us, no matter what, can take them on. And basically, I want them to have, I want it to be a fair fight, is sort of this little joke. And it's this nice stand-up, basically, to me, putting her on the same pedestal as Captain America, because again, she was a colonel in the Air Force, and you do not get to that rank unless you have paid your dues.
Yeah, unless you're good at your job.
Unless you're really good at your job and you're really smart, you can't advance that far. And to me, In Pursuit of Flight was the first story I'd ever read where somebody, a writer, Kelly Sue DeConnick, of course, in this story, finally let Carol Danvers, I think, accept her rank and a demotion. But, you know.
But it sounds good. It sounds good.
you get what I'm saying. And that's why In Pursuit of Flight is my number two.
This is definitely on my also-rans. I also think the update of the costume is very important. I harp on a lot of female costumes on the podcast. And I think that by putting her in this costume, it looks more like a uniform, and you are showing that she's just as powerful, just as important, and just as beautiful, completely covered up. And I really tip my hat to them for making that choice.
Yeah, I did. I was so close to putting this on my list. I think I was going on this list from obviously story perspective, but there was some other art that kind of I gravitated to more in some other stories. But this one, I was really impressed with what Kelly Sue did on this. I think it's a tricky thing to start a new book and a new series and a new direction with a character by throwing them in like a time travel story. Like, that's just a lot for, I think, new readers to take in sometimes. But this was the perfect thing to do for that character, to sort of remind everybody what she was. I'm with you, Jason. Like, I remember her as the drunk in the Avengers books for a while, and that was just such a weird time. Like, it just seemed like not only did nobody really know what to do with her, but nobody wanted to do anything with that character. Yeah. It was really weird. And so to just have this sort of like rebrand and new approach and reminder for people that she's a pretty, not just powerful badass, but like, just from a personal standpoint, she's, you know, in her military background, she's not going to take this, you know, I mean, she's legit. Like you said, she outranks Captain America, you know? And so I don't know. This was a home run for me. Like I said, it was really close to putting it on there. I honestly think the reason why I took it off is I was like, I know everybody else is going to have this one. So.
Sometimes you can do that because you know that other people are going to put them on their lists.
Well, speaking of things that are going on our list, we are here. We're finally at the number one spot. I guarantee you neither one of you have my number one. We already know what Brent's number one is, and we'll give another shot to talk about it if you want. But Ashley, it's time to find out, what's your number one?
My number one is the first full Captain Marvel story that I ever read, going into it being like, I want to read a Captain Marvel story. And Carol's not in it. It is The Death of Captain Marvel / Captain Marvel, written and drawn by Jim Starlin. It is not only, in my opinion, to this day, the greatest Captain Marvel story, I think it is one of the greatest stories in comics. It's so impactful. Mm-hmm. It is so sad. I defy you to read it and not tear up if you don't cry. And it's so groundbreaking because it came out, you know, in the Silver Age, toward that big turning point where comics got real gritty.
Early 80s, I believe.
Yes. And it sort of depends on where you want to count the end of the Silver Age as being. He dies of cancer.
Yeah.
He doesn't. Marvel, who's like one of the most amazing Marvel cosmic characters, doesn't go out in a blaze of glory. He doesn't go out fighting Annihilus or Ultron. I don't know if Ultron was created at this time, or any of the giant cosmic villains the way you would expect him to go out in a giant explosion. He dies in his bed, and the entire Marvel universe shows up to pay their respects and to say goodbye. And I've cried at a lot of comics in my life. I just think that this is such a profound statement about his impact and about his legacy and about how great heroes and great people show up for each other no matter what, because we're used to seeing them show up to fight bad guys, but to show up for this very private moment and to filter it through this weird cosmic creature, I think, is so interesting because this feels like a story that should have been given to an X-Men character or even an Avenger, and it's not. We give it to Mar-Vell, and the fact that they've never brought him back in an ongoing long-term capacity, I think speaks to the impact of the story and the respect that we have for Jim Starlin as a creator. And I just really think everyone should read this. And I think when you read this, you'll learn a lot about comic book storytelling and what makes a great Captain Marvel story. So it had to be my number. It was the only thing I knew going into this list was going to be on it, was the death of Captain Marvel is my number one. I'm sorry it's not a Carol story. I know people are disappointed, but it never gets better than this. So that's my number one.
Well, unfortunately, Ashley, I have to reveal that you are being let go from the podcast.
No. Am I going to be replaced by the cat?
No.
Jason is taking on a cat co-pilot just like Carol did.
That's right. No, that's a great choice. It's a solid, solid choice. Brent, did you feel like you got to say everything you needed to say about your number one choice, the life of Captain Marvel?
I think we had a good conversation. I will just heap more praise on Death of Captain Marvel. I didn't factor this one in. I wanted to keep mine just as Carol stories. If I changed that, this would absolutely be my number one. I remember getting my copy of this book probably in the early 90s when I was a little bit younger. Me and my brother would always have, when my parents had rummage sales, we'd run like a lemonade stand, and whatever money we made from like selling stuff in the lemonade stand, my dad would take us to the comic book store that weekend.
Aww.
And I made like $12. And so I remember going to the store and I was going to get some books, and just the main image of this book, I didn't know Captain Marvel at all, really. That much. And so, but the cool skull, like the death holding him in his lap and all the superheroes, I didn't know much about it, but I'm like, I want to read that. And that was that cool old Marvel graphic novel series that was kind of like odd shaped and stuff like that. And
it's oversized.
It's oversized. And it's like, it's not a trade, you know, but it's just like this graphic novel series that they did. And they had a bunch of cool ones that like later I found, but like that one, and like just like that time, like where the coloring on that book, it's like kind of like watercolor, and it was just everything about it was different than anything that I had read before. And I instantly got sucked in, and it was like, oh, like they're killing this character. And like, it's just a super emotional beat. And like you said, it wasn't this giant fight or anything like that. You find out he got cancer from the character called Nitro that he beat up like years ago. Like they did like a quick callback, and I don't know. It's a beautiful book. Starlin, he was in there with like George Perez, you know, like in terms artistically at the time. I just felt like those two were like neck and neck in the way, like in the 80s and stuff like that. Just the way that they would draw and the amount that they would put into a panel and their composition and their storytelling, and just the way they draw spaceships was so inspiring. I remember just trying to copy them and like how they had all these crazy wiring and, you know, like computer screens and stuff like that. It was super. I remember just pouring over that book, trying to soak up as much art as I could from it and stuff like that. And just Starlin had this crazy long and stretched out anatomy. It's like the abs had abs, you know, like
they definitely have 12 packs.
It all worked. And like, I can't picture anybody else drawing Captain or Mar-Vell besides him. But, I don't know. It's a beautiful book, and I understand why it keeps getting reprinted and remade, because the story is just wonderful.
I'm interrupting the podcast here real quick to make sure that the Mind University Booster Club has jerseys. And the way I'm going to do that is telling you about Wix. Now, Wix is used by over 140 million different people to make a website. You can start and publish your website for free. You can choose over 500 different stunning templates, and you can start from scratch, and you can create all kinds of cool things like menus and forms and galleries and social bars and clip art, lots and lots of clip art. You can make your site look like, remember back in the 90s, so everybody had those like dancing Spider-Man GIFs all over their website? Well, Wix allows you to do that. And to let you know, we use Wix for Jawin.com. That's the site we use. It's so easy. It's click and drag. It is a website builder built for dummies like me who don't know how to build websites. It allows you also to have unlimited storage, email marketing tools, and even ad vouchers to advertise your Dancing Spider-Man GIF website. So get started now by going to Wix.com. That's Wix.com/podcast to get 10% off. That's Wix.com/podcast. And now back to the show.
Well, Jason, we've brought the tone of this podcast down. Would you like to lift us back up?
I'm going to lift us back up so hard that fans' heads are going to spin and they're going to yell at me for putting this at number one. My number one is The Ultimates, and I am not talking about the Mark Miller Ultimates 1 or 2. I'm not talking about the Jeff Loeb, Joe Madera travesty that is Ultimates Volume 3. I am talking about, I believe this is the all-different, all-new post-Secret Wars Ultimates, and that is where they relaunched the series as a team led by Carol Danvers. Now, the fact of this book is interesting is because we've seen Carol on many teams. We've seen her in Avengers teams. We've seen her all kinds of stuff. But this team puts her with Black Panther. It puts her with Miss America. It puts her with Blue Marvel. It puts her with Spectrum. It puts her with characters that are going to test her a little bit, are going to put her at odds. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter that makes this team so cool is that they explain away the name, or this version of the name, you know, because the Ultimates, of course, from the Ultimate Marvel Universe, they wanted to keep that name. But in this version, they are the ultimate solution for the ultimate problems. This is not a superhero team. This is a team that Carol and their group, they get together. They're like, hey, what could be a problem for Earth a couple years down the road? Oh, Galactus? Great. We're going to figure out a way to stop Galactus. And their solution to stop Galactus is not to kill him, not to stop him from coming to Earth, but to actually cure his hunger. And spoilers, they do it. This book, when it came out, was such cosmic Marvel sugar, like straight into your veins. But at every aspect of it, it worked. Now, generally, I would be against Carol being in this team. Carol would not work with this team. But she's kind of the perfect leader for this team because everybody in this team is kind of rambunctious. Everybody in this team kind of is like, yeah, let's just go do it. And that's who Carol is.
Absolutely.
And so at every moment of this, it's sort of this book is sort of Captain Marvel and her super friends, really.
if Marvel wants to hire Jason to write a cartoon, there you go.
but everything about this book is fun. It's written by Al Ewing. It's the first volume is drawn by Kenneth Rocafort, who I think is criminally underrated. And it just keeps, like, every time, it's funny because, like, the first volume, and I'm only incurring the first volume, the second volume is really fun, but I really think the first volume is where it's at, because that's where they decide to cure Galactus, and then they find out, they decide to solve the problem of Thanos, and then also they find out at the, towards the end that space-time is broken, so they turn into this, like, sort of Doctor Who-ish kind of thing. It's just so much fun, and Carol, this is like perfect. Like what Brent was saying earlier about Alpha Flight, it kind of seems like everything in Carol's job history, her superhero history, like that made her perfect for Alpha Flight. That stuff all made her the perfect team leader for the Ultimates. Mm. And I will say this, that when I first heard about this title, I was against it. Because I was a very big fan of the Mark Miller Volume 1, Volume 2 Brian Hitch series. But I'll be honest with you, I kind of think they earned the title by the end of the first 12 issues. Because this Volume 1 is the first 12 issues. But
Jason, this is the internet. You can't change your opinion or grow up.
Yeah. Well, I did. I did. And to be honest with you, Carol, at a lot of times, tries to run this team as a military team. And she has two very powerful, very smart African men, Black Panther T'Challa and the Blue Marvel, who are both smarter than her. And it's interesting to see when they explain to her when military succinctness in orders are needed and when you just need to step back and think about it like a civilian. And I feel over the course of the 12 issues, they teach Carol that lesson of like, hey, military can't solve everything, but here's when we need the military. Because there's several moments in the story where they're like, take charge, Carol, go. And then there's several moments where they're like, hey, chill out. We need to work some math.
We're going to science this.
Yeah, we're going to science this. But to me, this book activates Carol Danvers in a way that I'd never seen her activated. And again, I wish there was 100 issues, a 100 issue run with this team. There's only, sadly, I think 24.
Well, this is modern comics, Jason.
Yeah. But there need like there was with the old Roger Stern Avengers series, there needs to be like a long run with Al Ewing, Kenneth Rockefeller, Carol Danvers led Ultimates team. That's how good that run was. And to be honest with you, I thought it was the best Marvel book in the all new, all different, whatever it was called. And that
Marvel
to
now,
me, yeah, and yeah, whatever it is, all then, all backwards, jazzercise Marvel. I just think that it was the perfect book for Carol, and it really was the perfect showcase for her. It was in space. So that's why it's my number one.
Nice.
That's a good sell, man. I kind of let that one pass me by a little bit, I think. And I kind of forgot Al had written it. And I don't know if you guys are reading Immortal Hulk right now that he's doing.
It's great.
It's one of the best books on the shelves right now. It's stellar. It's just Hulk is my favorite character. So like to see the Hulk do it, like being so good right now, it just makes me so happy.
Is that why he's on your convention banner?
I don't know. I maybe. It was a randomness there.
Well, okay. There's our list, everybody. If you want to check out some of the stories that we have recommended, you know that every week we do recommended reading. If you go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading, you will find each of our top three choices there. You can click on them. It'll take you to Amazon. You can purchase the book. You can read the book. And then a little bit of that purchase comes back to the Mind University. Now, we're not done with Brent, but real quick, we got to drop into the honor roll. And the honor roll is what, Ashley?
The honor roll is where if you are an amazing person and you head on over to iTunes Scoom Apple Podcast, I don't know what it's called anymore, you leave us a 5-star review. We'll read whatever you want and say your name because we want those 5 stars. So, Jason, who is joining the honor roll today?
Today, the honor roll is joined by two people. Nick the Fancy Unicorn says, hanging out with your favorite geeks. They say, I love this podcast because it's like hanging out with your favorite geek friends who love the subject matter and want to share all their favorite details. It reminds me of backstories I had forgotten about and gives me new details I somehow missed along the way. Thanks for making such a great show. Thank you, Nick. The other person that's joining the honor roll is the lady who knows no limits.
Love it.
And she says, I'm a huge nerd and I hate mornings. The podcast has helped me love mornings. I put this podcast on as I force myself to function and it really helps. Also, it feels awesome to know more about comic book characters that I love. And as an added bonus, the hosts of the podcast are great people.
Oh, thank you.
So the lady who knows no limits and Nick the Fancy Unicorn, they are welcomed into our teacher's lounge because they have joined the honor roll and they have given us 5 stars on iTunes. And if you want to join the honor roll, go do that on iTunes or Apple Podcasts because it helps us in the iTunes search algorithm. Now, Brent, we want people to find you in the search algorithm of the internet. So please let our listeners know where they can support your work. And please shout out any comic books or any comic book work you got coming out.
My website is BrentSchoonover.com. I'm on Twitter at Brent Schoonover. I'm on Instagram at BScooneyArt. And I'm on Facebook at The Art of Brent Schoonover. And I'll just save it all for once. Schoonover is Schoonover, because it's really long. So currently, I cannot talk about anything that I'm working on.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm working on a creator-owned book. I can tell you I'm working with writer Benjamin Percy on a creator-owned project. We're very excited. We're in the middle of issue 1 right now. It'll be out later this year. I think it's going to be the best work I've ever done. I'm really excited with where it's going.
Will we get an announcement of that at future conventions?
Yes. Great. Yes. I'm super excited about it. I wish I could talk more about it, but I'm sure that there'll be some. Marvel always kind of gets me something here and there, so I'm sure there'll be something down the road. But for now, it's kind of this creator-owned project that I'm really excited about.
Well, thanks for joining us today, man. You were an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Don't forget, everybody out there, you can subscribe to this podcast on everywhere you can listen to podcasts, including Spotify. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. You can follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. You can follow me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. And Ashley, where can they follow the podcast?
They can follow the podcast at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at GHL Podcast.
And now the last section of the show, hashtag stick around, where we force you to sit through all our advertisements. Brent, what's your favorite Captain Marvel costume to draw and why?
Captain Marvel costume?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I've never gotten to draw her helmet. That's the one thing I've been itching to do.
The mohawk hair.
All the book projects I've like done with her, I haven't gotten to do that. So obviously, I think the current one that Chris Anka designed is my favorite to do, but I'd love to get to do it with the helmet. So.
Getting
to draw retro Marvel, where he doesn't really make a lot of sense, but his sideburns show through his with his mask. And at first, I was trying to figure out how to make sense of all that. And then at some point, I was just like, nope, doesn't matter. I'm just going to have those sideburns, and then they're going to be on the mask. Because that's the way they did it in the 70s, and it's good enough for me. So,
all right. But, that's a great answer. I like that. Sideburns and stuff. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Geek History Lesson. I have been Jason Sideburns Inman.
I have been Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Class is dismissed.